Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to a bonus episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me as always is Fred Moreland. And you are getting this at your normal time, but just want to be clear here. We are going to be dropping our episodes now on either Thursday or Friday after Dynamite to try and be a little bit more current for you, our listener. But today is not about Dynamite. It is not about Rampage. It is not about Sasha Banks or Mercedes Moné. It is about the 2022 Voices of Wrestling Match of the Year poll, and Fred and I are going to reveal our Match of the Year lists. Fred, this is always a really exciting time, and I know not only have you put together your list, but you've also been doing a lot of work with Cage Match and figuring out the wrestler of the year there.
Yeah, so I put together my list of the top 10 and voted on it because I write for Voices of Wrestling, I guess, and they've decided that that somehow makes me qualified to do other things. They haven't, like, kicked me out yet. I still don't understand that. So I got my top 10 after watching nearly 1,400 matches this past year because I'm a friggin' nerd. And then I also have, if you want to talk about that after we talk about our ballots, a couple times this year, I've taken all the match data, the match ratings off of Cage Match, and used those to try to find out who should win the Most Outstanding Wrestler Award from the Wrestling Observer newsletter. And I just finished going through all the data from 2022 and writing it up and posting about it. And we could talk about the results of that at the end, because number one is not going to be who most people think, at least in terms of total points.
Yeah, I really like the total point system. And I know you've got like an aggregation to where like it's an average point total. So I think those two numbers are going to be very interesting and very different at the same time. Yes. But let's get going here, Fred. We are going to go one by one. We'll start with you. What was your number 10 match of the year?
My top 10 is going to feature a lot of FTR, and number 10 is one that I think got a little overlooked in that fantastic year they had in 2022. It was them defending the IWGP Tag Team Championship against Aussie Open at Royal Quest on October 1st. I thought this was a really good match. I thought it was about the best I've seen from Aussie Open, who I think had a what would normally be a like Tag Team of the Year contender year, but just, you know, FTR just ran away with it. So, yeah, I think that this was just a fantastic match, really exciting with a hot crowd, and it's just great stuff.
Yeah, I'm really excited to see what Aussie Open does now that they're more on a mainstream level and they're getting a push in New Japan. They're getting main event time on AEW whenever they come over. And I think that they are primed to have an absolutely tremendous 2023. Because they are finally getting the prime spot they've honestly deserved for a few years. And yes, that match against FTR was tremendous.
Yeah, and if you liked Aussie Open, I mean, they had several other good matches this year. They did fantastic work in that in the six-man tag tournament alongside Will Ospreay, of course, in AEW. They also had, I think they had a great, maybe the best tag team match in Impact this year against Ace Austin and Chris Bay, and the World Tag League final against Hirooki Goto and Yoshihashi was also very good. So if you didn't check out Aussie Open this year, you should get on that. They're just a fantastic tag team.
Absolutely. My number 10 match of the year is Chris Jericho versus Eddie Kingston from AEW Revolution, March 6th. I gave it 4.75 stars. The little wrestling I watched this year, I did not watch 1,400 matches. I probably watched in the neighborhood of like 500 to 700. This match stood out for many reasons, and they built up Eddie Kingston because he was a fan favorite from pretty much the get-go, and they had to turn him babyface. They did so with the Time Bomb Death Match with Jon Moxley and Kenny Omega, and the fans just absolutely love Eddie Kingston, but he's never been able to win a really big match in a big spot. And this match, Eddie did his normal Kings Road stuff. Jericho was absolutely tremendous, and Kingston finally won, and he did so with the stretch plum, which I thought was just a really, really nice touch. I saw somebody, I believe it was Sean Sidor, make this his match of the year, and I was thrilled to see that it's getting a lot of love. This was arguably my second favorite match of the year, but as far as match quality, which is what I do this list based on, it came in at number 10.
Yeah, this was the match I think opened immediately with like Kingston dumping Jericho right on his dome with some suplex. I thought this was a fantastic match as well. I went 4 stars on it, or 4 or 5 stars on it. And I just thought it was great. Really good stuff from those two, and much better than the barbed wire match that came later that year.
Yeah, that could have been really, really good. It just did not come to be. Fred, what is your number 9 match of the year?
My number 9 match is from another New Japan, but not in Japan match. It was from Windy City Riot on April 16th. So I think not quite WrestleMania weekend. It was Jon Moxley against Will Ospreay. These two, I think, are probably going to be, if not the top two, like very close to being the top two wrestlers of the year for me. They just had a fantastic match, and it was a really cool pairing with Will Ospreay's kind of evolution of his style from his earlier days of doing a lot of flips to the more complete work he does now, and Jon Moxley just having quite possibly the best year of his career as AEW's MVP. Just a great combination, a very violent match, and very cool.
I thought what was really cool about this was the crowd was very, very hot, and you could tell that Will Ospreay was excited to work in front of this crowd. This one barely missed my match of the year list because I loved it too. And they continued that storyline with Will Ospreay against the refs at the end, where and it was just everything was built so well. Moxley and Ospreay had way better chemistry than I expected. And this was, if this could have been in a bigger building, I think you would have more representation on a match of the year list. But I don't think a lot of people tune in the Windy City Riot.
No, especially with it being on New Japan World pay-per-view, so you had to pay extra money on top of that. I waited until I got to the free service because I'm cheap. But yeah, it's definitely worth your time.
Yeah. My number 9 match of the year, Best of the Super Juniors from May 26th, El Phantasmo versus Robbie Eagles. This was my favorite match of the year. I loved watching this match. You just didn't quite know what you were going to get from El Phantasmo. He's kind of been teasing a little bit of a babyface turn over the course of the last calendar year. It feels like either he's going to go full on babyface or he's going to end up taking over Bullet Club. I think they want to make him the next Kenny Omega. And this match against Robbie Eagles, he pulled out a lot of stops. He did multiple finishing moves, and or at least attempted, of former Bullet Club leaders. Robbie Eagles ended up winning with the Ron Miller special after hitting the 450 on his knee. This was almost a 5-star match for me, and I loved it from start to finish.
Yeah, this was another really good match to me. I gave it 5 stars, and for people that are wondering how many 5-star matches I had 26, so like 2% of the matches I watched where I specifically went out of my way to watch good matches all year. I thought this was fantastic. The thing with El Phantasmo and Robbie Eagles is between opportunities or lack thereof, and also just like how, especially Phantasmo, how he works. I feel like they should be having more high rated matches than they do. They're both fantastic workers, and this was a great match that did a wonderful job paying off like years of storylines between these two. And I thought it was just a fantastic end to that storyline, and Phantasmo shortly thereafter moving up to heavyweight.
Yeah, I'm really excited for the future of El Phantasmo. And Robbie Eagles just continues to be tremendous. I love that he's a junior. He can do the flippy-do stuff, but he is not a flippy-do guy. And it really adds a nice element to this junior division. Fred, your number eight match of the year.
My number eight match of the year, because of Fredflation and just generally being a scale breaker pervert, this is another 5 1/4 match for me, which is all three of the ones I've talked about so far have been. This was from Wrestle Kingdom Day 1 on January 4th, Okada versus Shingo. I don't know what else I need to say other than that. Just two of the absolute best in the world going at it, and I thought this was an absolute highlight.
Yeah, I like that match, but I didn't get to that level for me as some of the other ones, because like you, I thought I had a lot of 5-star matches. I actually left one 5-star match off because even though technically it was, I gave it a better rating, it was this one. I knocked it down and I actually left it off my list because I wanted to give love to the other two. The rest of my matches will be 5-stars. And it's so hard to say anything bad about these two wrestlers. It really is. They're just tremendous workers, and they deliver pretty much every single moment they're in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, just two absolute guys at the best of their game, just going at it and having a match. Given a lot of time in a major setting. Yeah, it was clap crowds, and that's tough. But, I mean, there's, some New Japan matches were able to overcome that, and this was one of them.
Mm-hmm. All right. My number eight match of the year is the match that is not getting nearly as much love as I think it should. Kazuchika Okada versus Will Ospreay from Wrestle Kingdom Night 2. I gave it 5-stars. If I'm remembering correctly, Okada came out and just came out guns blazing after it. Weren't people talking about him being washed right before this match? With the back?
Because he spent a long time selling his back, and a bunch of people, fell for the kayfabe. And then he was just like, I'm back, baby. And just had a fantastic year. If it wasn't for some just Will Ospreay losing his mind and some other guys just having fantastic years. Plus, it's like the LeBron effect or the Michael Jordan effect where, a guy's great every single year. There's fatigue with that when it comes to voting. And that's why LeBron James hasn't won every MVP, for the 2010s, or why Michael Jordan just didn't get the NBA MVP every year in the 90s. You go back and you look, and undoubtedly Michael Jordan was the best player every year he was active in the 90s, and LeBron in the 2010s, but they didn't get the MVPs every year because it's a storyline. Basically the media finds storylines and gloms onto them, and to some effect the fans do too. Okada is just one of the best wrestlers of all time, and if it's fun to find new guys to follow and love, but Okada is always there for you.
Yeah. Oh, and you could tell that they are setting up a really big moment for Will Ospreay, and you could really see it throughout the match. He beat, Ospreay beat Okada at the end of the G1. I believe it was this year, because that was pretty much when they were forming the United Empire. Mm-hmm. And this was kind of meant to be, hey, you can beat me, but you can't beat me in the big spot. Right. And they kind of did a same, a similar arc with Omega, but they're going to be different. And I think we're going to see Will Ospreay within the next 3 years beat Okada at the Tokyo Dome. Because next year, I think the plan is very simple. It's going to mm-hmm. be Ospreay beating Omega Dome. In the first ever Gaijin only main event. And it'll also be the first time a Gaijin ever wins the main event at the Tokyo Dome, because we've had Kenny Omega in it twice, Jay White in it twice, and then Ospreay in it once. They are 0-5. Yeah. So, and we've talked about stuff like this for a long time in New Japan. They've always pushed homegrown wrestlers. They've always pushed native wrestlers. Mm. And we're in a different era, and it's good that we're in a different era because we're seeing a lot more new blood in this division really ascend to the top. And I think Ospreay's time is coming, but he just wasn't able to get over the hump here.
Yeah, I thought this was a lot of fun. Just and you know, I'm hearing a lot of hype for their G1 match. I like that G1 match far less than this one. I only went 4.5 on that, and I, you know, I'm just kind of surprised. But hey, it's Omega and Ospreay. It's Ospreay and Okada. It's never going to be a bad time.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't remember what I gave that match, but I don't remember loving it. I thought it was good. Very good.
I was let down by it. I mean, if you're telling me Okada Ospreay are having a match, I'm like already like expecting a 5-star classic. And if when I put down something less than 5, I'm like, what happened? Which is crazy to think, you know, but.
Yeah, there was. I'm going to have to go rewatch it to get a better sense for it, but I couldn't tell you a damn spot about that match.
Yeah.
Number 7 match of the year for you, Fred.
I want to read a quote from one of history's greatest philosophers. You know, I just, whenever I'm down, I just think of this quote, and it really lifts me up. And it's, you want your 5-star matches, your 30-minute classics. I want big, meaty men slapping meat. Big E is absolutely correct. Number 7 here is Eddie Kingston and Tomohiro Ishii. A match between my two favorite grumpy fathers that just got off shift work. These guys just beat the ever-loving hell out of each other on a pre-show match for AEW All Out, which is absolutely ridiculous that these two weren't even on a pay-per-view, and they just chopped the living hell out of each other. It was fantastic. I loved it. This was 5.25 stars for me. Absolute must-see. It's still on YouTube. If you haven't seen this, please take the time because it's fantastic. It's, you know, Kingston still brings his All Japan, you know, style from the 90s, very inspired by that. And then Ishii is just at his peak as Ishii. It has to be Ishii's best American performance ever. And he's had a bunch of very good ones, but this was just sublime, I thought.
Yeah, I remember this match and I gave it 4.75. It was just, like you said, meaty men slapping meat. And Ishii just has a tremendous style. And we have been incredibly blessed to have him. The man's 48 years old and he's still doing this like crazy.
He is fantastic. He's so good at everything, but especially selling. And just watch one of Ishii's great matches and watch him sell. And that's just a masterpiece class in masterclass, I should say, just mixed up words today, in selling. Like, he's great at everything that he does, but selling is just, for Ishii, is just an art form. And you got some of that here. Kingston is like a perfect sympathetic baby face too. So these two just had a great match.
Yeah. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch it just because I love meaty men slapping meat. It's great. My number 7 match of the year is the FTR Briscoes match that nobody is talking about. And it makes me very sad because I thought it was really, really close to the dog collar match. And that is FTR versus the Briscoes. This is the one that everybody else is talking about. I'm getting ahead of myself. This is FTR versus the Briscoes on 4-1 at Supercard of Honor. I gave it 5 stars. I loved this. I had no idea what to expect when I watched these two, when I was going to watch this match, because FTR, really good tag team. The Briscoes, really good tag team. But that doesn't mean they're going to be great together.
Yeah.
It could be water and oil. It could be like olive oil and steak. Like, we just didn't know. And then all of a sudden, going into the Slack and hearing the live reactions, like, this could be match of the year. I'm like, whoa, okay. So jumped in, and it was everything you could have asked for. These two teams went to war. They had a level of respect for each other. And it's weird because this is one of those matches I don't remember any spot from it. I couldn't tell you one. But it doesn't matter because everything just flowed incredibly. It was violent. It was brutal. There was real energy and passion with these wrestlers. And they took things to another level. And I'll be honest, without this match, you probably don't see a true rebirth of Ring of Honor like we're seeing with Tony Khan, because they brought Ring of Honor back.
Yeah, it's this entire match was the entire reason that Ring of Honor had the year they did, because it set up the rest of that feud, which is my pick for feud of the year, just because I figure you have three high level matches like they did, you can't go against it. And I mean, it was just fantastic, just an absolute must see. You know, we'll talk about that more in a little bit. Teasers.
What is your number six match of the year?
My number six match of the year is the return of the Elite at Full Gear on November 19th this year against Death Triangle in their match for the World Trios Championship. This was just fantastic. You got six of the best athletes in the world just going all out and doing everything they can, and somehow setting up a best of seven series afterwards that did not disappoint at any point in it. Every match of theirs was fantastic. And I went 5.5 on this. I thought it was a step up from everything I've talked about so far. Just a great, great match.
Yeah. I loved it too. It did not make my match of the year list. Honestly, none of those matches made my match of the year list, but you're going to see a lot of representation in the Dynamite Dozen from these two teams. That was a really fun match, and I loved the hammer finish.
Yeah, that was really cool. And, you know, what I'm really interested to see when the voices full voices list is released is how the matches from this series do on that list, because you can make an argument for several of them deserving top 10 spots, and I wouldn't be shocked if, like, there's some vote splitting there where you don't get any near, like, the top 25, but you have several that are, like, in the bottom half of the top 100.
Yeah. Great stuff. My number six match of the year, United Empire versus the Elite from Dynamite on August 31st, the semifinals of the Trios Tag Team Title Tournament. Look, this was the first time we really got to see Will Ospreay versus Kenny Omega in a ring, because the only other time that they had a match against each other was in PWG back in 2015 when Will Ospreay was a baby. And this is a much, much different version of Ospreay. He can do flippy-do. He can honestly work any style now.
And oh, yeah.
His growth will not be recognized by some segments of the wrestling audience because it's Will Ospreay, and he's kind of a douchebag as far as how he presents himself on Twitter. Like, that's his gimmick? Fine. Ospreay has turned himself into what we could honestly potentially call the greatest wrestler that ever lived by the time his career is done. And that is not an insane track. And we're going to talk more about your cage match data pulling here in a little bit, Fred. And Ospreay comes out looking tremendous, and he continues to have great matches against everybody. This match with the Elite was tremendous because Aussie Open, like Mark Davis, some of the stuff he's able to do as just an absolute unit. The man's like 6'4", 275. He's doing topes.
Brick shit house.
He and Kyle Fletcher are throwing the Bucks around. Omega's doing his stuff, and this eventually got to a point where it was Ospreay, I believe, versus all three members of the Elite, and Ospreay's basically like, just fuck you, and just goes to war. This, I'm envious that I couldn't get to Chicago early enough to go watch this match, but man, was it tremendous. I cannot wait for the streaming service. This will be right at the top of the list for first rewatch.
I thought this was great. I went 4.75 on it. I think that the TV formatting just threw me a little bit on this one for some reason. But I love this match. Like, you can't say enough good things about it, I don't think.
No, absolutely. Now we are in our top five. Fred, who's at five for you?
Five for me is that FTR Briscoe's Supercard of Honor match you mentioned from April 1st. I'm not going to belabor the point. Everything you said, I agree with. I thought this was great. Went 5.5 on it. And fantastic match, which I think will have a lot of historical importance as we go forward.
Oh, absolutely. I loved that match. But my number five match is the match that I think should be getting a lot more love and isn't. And that's FTR versus the Briscoes. 7/23. I can't remember which pay-per-view it was.
Death Before Dishonor. Yeah.
Death Before Dishonor. I gave it 5 stars. Look, it's really hard to have a great match and then have another great match, but it's almost impossible to have a 5-star match and then top it. And I thought they topped it with this. They built everything so well. Obviously, you kind of saw it telegraphed a little bit, and it's hard with best 2 out of 3 falls matches. Because usually the winner of the first fall doesn't win the match. And that happened here, but they kept you invested. And after they got the Briscoes got the pin early on, and then they segmented it well because it was about 19 minutes, about 12, and then they did it about another 10. This match was phenomenal from start to finish. And I really hope that people recognize how great this was and not just sandwich in between Super Card of Honor and Final Battle, because this in a normal year, I think would be a top three match of the year.
I hated this match, Tyler. So much I gave it number 11 on my list. It was just right out of there. I thought this was another fantastic match from those two teams, four men, as I split the difference. Just fantastic stuff.
Yeah, awesome match. I'm really excited to give it another watch because it was phenomenal. Fred, your number four match of the year.
My number four match of the year is kind of surprising for me because given how I generally feel about their product, but it's Sheamus and Gunter from Clash at the Castle for WWE on September 3rd. Again, go back to the slap and meat comment, just beating the hell out of each other. It was a ton of fun and easily the best thing I've seen in WWE in a long time.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I didn't get a chance to watch that match, but I heard a lot of really good things. And I'm sorry, it's not Gunther. It is Walter. I can't believe that one, they changed his name, and two, he's not a big beefy boy anymore. He's just big.
He's still great, though. He's still great.
Oh, he's still great. But I'm going to have to try and get to watching that match. But it's just so hard because WWE blows. I did love his matches with Ilya Dragunov. I think that was my number four match of the year last year. And Gunther, I guess I'll transition. He just tremendous. My number four match of the year, Forbidden Door. What probably should have been the main event, Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. I gave it 5 stars. When this card was announced, you look at it, Will Ospreay versus Orange Cassidy. What a letdown. There's so many guys on that roster that you would probably prefer to have in that spot, but it ended up being the match that you never knew that you needed. You got the initial chicanery with Orange Cassidy, you know, being a little dork, a little goofball. But then he took it to another level. And he became the Orange Cassidy that, oh, this is real. I'm not going to do my shtick. And he and Ospreay just went back and forth, back and forth. And it was one of the best matches I have ever been able to watch. I was obsessed with it. And I really gave this serious thought for being my match of the year.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of talk about it that way. I wasn't as high on it. I air quotes only went 4.5 stars on it.
How dare you?
I know, I'm a monster. But I liked it a lot. I mean, it was a lot of fun, and I can definitely see how you would think it's a top 10 match of the year.
Yeah, this resonated with me a lot, and it's going to be hard for me to ever question Tony Khan putting Orange Cassidy in a big spot again, because he put him in this spot. They needed this card to deliver because of how disappointing the build was, and it became the show of the year. And I think a lot of that has to do with the success of this match, because if this match bombs, you're going to have a completely different tone coming out of the show. Plus, you got Shibata coming in at the end, which is going to pop everyone every time.
Yeah, that was a very awesome moment as well. Ready for my number three?
Yes, sir.
All right. I went with Bryan Danielson against Adam Page on January 5th. Dynamite. So I have two matches from that day. I thought this was fantastic. I thought that these two were just tailor-made for each other. And honestly, I'm a little sad that they only did the one match together. The two matches, I guess I should say. But this was just fantastic. I guess it was three matches now that I remember, because they did one a few months ago. I definitely know what I'm talking about. But yeah, this is great. I loved it. Just fantastic work from both of them. Nearly half an hour on free TV is just crazy to think about.
I'm one of the few people I did not like this one more than I liked the 60-minute draw. I thought it was very good. I gave it, I believe, 4.75 in real time. But it did not hit me quite on a level of match of the year. But when you look at it, from a neutral perspective, I totally get why. Especially because you love Brian Danielson, and
I do.
Sometimes I love Brian Danielson too, but not to that level. And it's just going to resonate with people more.
Yeah. And it's all personal preference.
Yeah. All right. My number three match of the year from Double or Nothing on May 29th, Anarchy in the Arena. And so the problem with some matches that are complete chaos and you have everybody going everywhere is you can miss a lot. I remember being in the building at Full Gear when they had the tag match with the Bucks and Adam Cole, and it was like the 5-on-5, and everybody was just everywhere, and it was just complete chaos. A lot of people hated it. I thought it was great, but I could see everything in real time. Yeah. And that can be a real challenge with these because you can't focus on like four or five different storylines happening all throughout. And if the production team doesn't nail this match, it does not get nearly the love that it's getting. They deserve as much credit as the wrestlers because they were bouncing back and forth. The announcers were phenomenal in keeping everything and then also having fun. Like, what the hell is going on? They created chaos. They had high spots. They had blood. They had brutality and violence.
They had comedy early on with the theme song playing.
They had everything that you could want. And production is the reason why that this match is number three. Because if production is not good, this match is probably just a four-star match. But they nailed every single element of it. And it honestly, if this would have been the blow-off to the feud, I thought it would have been great. But the blow-off to the feud ended up being a couple weeks later, blood and guts. And that wasn't even the blow-off to the feud. They still went for another 3 months.
It should have been the blow-off to the feud.
Yeah, no joke. But that has a lot to do with the depth of the roster at that point anyways. I can't say enough good things. Anarchy in the UK was absolutely insane and ridiculous in every possible good connotation you can think of.
Yeah, this was a ton of fun. I think it would have been my number 12 match if I went down that far. Like, it just really sticks out to me from the five-star matches. And I think that Wild Thing is a song that looped, if I'm not mistaken. It's been several months now. But that I was when it kicked on for the second time, because I was in the writer's Slack, and I was typing in all caps, because I'm a very cool person, about how they needed to replay the song. They needed to just have it go the entire match. They needed a new jacket. And I was a few seconds before y'all in the arena, or behind y'all in the arena. And Rich Craich was like, "You just need to wait, Fred." And then it hit the second time, and I was pumping my fist in my den, watching this, just hooting and hollering. It was fantastic, just a total spectacle, and just fantastic for that.
Yeah,
just fantastic stuff throughout.
Are you still talking about Anarchy?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought so, but my brain, I still have like a little bit of the COVID fog.
Gotcha. It's all good, man. It's all good.
Look, I will say when that song looped, Jericho just being the ultimate shitbag professional.
And then breaking the thing a couple minutes later, yeah.
Just you can't perfect. Get better than that. It just tremendous stuff.
Just a perfect idea. I loved it.
Fred, your number two match of the year.
My number two match of the year, which is another one I will not belabor, was Ospreay versus Okada from Wrestle Kingdom on January 5th. I thought this was fantastic. It overcame the clap crowds. It overcame all the other stuff. You know, New Japan coming off of two really down years after just a fantastic half of the 2010s. The pandemic really hit them hard. And I thought, you know, there's a lot of talk about how this year's Wrestle Kingdom is what's going to drag them out of the abyss, such as it was for them. But I think this really kind of started getting them back in the right direction, this match right here. It was a great exclamation point to their big event of the year, and I just loved it. I just thought these two were tailor-made to work with each other.
Yeah, these two are tailor-made, and they've built a really, really good story over the course of Ospreay's career, because they had that match in Rev Pro, and then Okada brings him into chaos, and it's really like a big brother, little brother kind of thing. And Ospreay has to continue to try and overcome.
Yes.
Just tremendous stuff. Fred, you will be shocked to know that my top two matches of the year are gimmick matches.
Okay.
Number two, FTR Briscoe's 3, double dog collar from Final Battle on December 10th. What can you say about this?
This might be the best match I've ever seen.
They mixed brutality. They mixed legit professional wrestling. They had blood. They had incredible spots. I will never forget. I think it was Mark Briscoe pulling FTR hair with the dog collar off the apron and through that table. I will never forget that spot.
That was a wild spot.
Oh, these guys built off their first two matches. They brought violence. They brought blood. They brought brutality. And they were still wrestling. And they had every single element. They had me eating out of the palm of their hand the entire time. I loved this. This is one of the few matches I watched back, like, within minutes after finishing, because it was so good. And these two teams, I will say, I know there's so many other elements at play. It's a fucking shame the Briscoes are not on Dynamite right now, because they're arguably the best tag team I've ever seen. Just with how they mix so many elements of professional wrestling, and they make the violence look so real. It doesn't feel like pro wrestling. It feels like they are literally trying to beat the shit out of you in a back alley. And that's what this match had. I will go to my grave thinking this is probably the best tag team match I've ever seen.
You can remove tag team from that sentence for me.
I saw Omega and Ospreay. I can't put this above that.
I think I like it better than Omega Ospreay. It's close, but I just rewatched Omega Ospreay with my wife this past weekend, and I still think FTR Briscoe's dog collar is above that for me. Not by much,
Does your wife like pro wrestling?
She says she doesn't. She'll watch stuff. She'll watch Dynamite with me, but that, you know, any more than that, she'll just be like, I'm good, thank you. But she wanted to watch this match because she heard about it, and she was very impressed by it. She says she still likes the first Ospreay Okada match better there. So, you know, deep Puro lore for my wife.
Hell yeah. All right, Fred, your number one match of the year.
Well, I just blew it, but it's FTR Briscoe's dog collar. I don't know, man. Like, I think it just meshed everything in pro wrestling you want to see. Storytelling, violence, just all this stuff. And everyone was perfect. It was the right match at the right time. It had great callbacks to their previous matches. I just love this match so much. I think it's just one of the absolute best matches of all time. And I know that, you know, we joke about FTR bald in his Twitter account sometimes, and how he needs to probably just delete that off his phone. But I mean, this was perfection. He had a great performance in particular. Jay Briscoe was fantastic. And Mark and Hare also had great nights too. I mean, what else can I say?
Yeah, you know, it's wild. I don't even think this is the best dog collar match of the year, because my number one match is CM Punk versus MJF at Full Gear. The little things, MJF coming out, because you knew he was excited for a dog collar match.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's a nerd like we are. He was thrilled. He gets out there, and then he's standing around waiting, and then all of a sudden you hear Miseria Cantare play. And it's like, what is going on? And then you start to really hear the song. The fog comes out. And I remember I put in the Slack that CM Punk better come out with his basketball shorts. And you know what? He did. And he came out with white shorts with black X's running up the sides. And you could see MJF trying not to be a nerd. And he's just sitting in the corner, really having to work to look like a shitbag. And Punk comes out, and then once he does his thing, and you could see in his eyes, like, Brawl Out is going to remove a lot of this from history because people are really jaded about CM Punk. The way his eyes looked when he is standing on the ropes and he is fist pumping and like singing along to Miseria Cantare by AFI, you can see the passion and the love for this business almost come back in full force. And then the dog collars came on, and they beat each other absolutely senseless. There was blood everywhere. There was a spot where Punk was hanging MJF from the ropes Like, he's, like, on the apron, and MJF's just screaming like a little pig. Just everything about this was tremendous. It didn't even matter in the course of things that MJF lost, because they delivered such a tremendous performance in this match. I will forever remember how I felt the beginning of that match when you saw somebody who had everything taken away from him just get reinvigorated by the love of professional wrestling. And that was when CM Punk hit the ring. Like, it's that set the tone, and then they delivered from there on out.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great match. I loved it. It is very unfortunate that I think it's going to be lost to history in a couple years, just because of the fact that this was kind of supposed to be in the middle of a feud, like a long-term feud, and instead it wasn't because of incidents. And this was it was a great match. Fantastic. I gave it 5 stars, and definitely my, like, top 20 of the year.
Yeah, this is the best gimmick match I've ever seen. And there's some other really, really good ones. You know, one that really comes to mind was SummerSlam 2002 with Triple H and Shawn Michaels. Like, that had some similar elements here, because you had a hatred. Obviously, that hatred was a lot deeper than this. But you also had Michaels, who was coming back for the first time in, what, like 4 years to actually wrestle in the ring. And you could see in him, when he's got the Muda scale all over his face, you could see him like, I love this shit. And Punk kind of had that same vibe. And I think that's why it resonated so much with me, that you have MJF, who's just a fucking history nerd like we are. But to see somebody reinvigorated was just, it just meant something more.
Yeah, this was awesome. It was definitely the highlight of Punk's return, and absolute must-see stuff. I do have a couple matches I want to mention that are not from the usual ones I watch. Specifically, I fell real behind on Julia, on Stardom this year, but the year-end December 29th show with Julia and Siri, they just had a fantastic match, going on the years of history they've built over the peak of Stardom. Dragon Gate, I only started to watch that even just a little bit this year, and like, I can't claim to be like ready to go on Open the Voice Gate or anything. I only watched a handful of matches, but the Canis, I think that's how you say it, because it's been months since I've watched it, but Canis's retirement match, you know, when people are crying in the ring while they're wrestling because of the emotion of it, it's just a very unique circumstance. The work was great in it, and it was a perfect send-off to someone that, as I understand it, again, not my expertise, was just really a big part of that promotion. In Michinoku Pro, they had a match between Musashi and Fujita Hayato, and Fujita Hayato was gone for like 7 years, I think, from wrestling due to various health issues, including a pretty bad cancer scare in his spinal column. And, you know, it was much like the Canis retirement match. There was just a lot of real promotion, you know, real emotion, I should say, in this match. And it was also just a very unique experience. And the last one I'm going to mention is kind of from Just Tap Out, but, you know, from Taka Taichi, Despomania. El Desperado versus Jun Kasai. El Desperado became a deathmatch legend this year. I love Jun Kasai, and I typically do not like death matches, but this was just great stuff. Absolutely memorable. Desperado had himself a wonderful year, and this was kind of the exclamation point on it.
Yeah, I have not had an opportunity to watch that match, but it is on my short list. One that I really wanted to mention, also from Dragon Gate, Jackie Funky Kamei and Jason Lee winning the tag team titles from Diamante and Shun Skywalker. That, I believe that was Kobe World.
Oh. I think that's right. I'm pulling that up right now because I only went 4.25 on that because I'm stingy all of a sudden, I guess. That was No, that was a different match I'm thinking of. I may not have seen that one.
That I gave it 4 3/4 and it barely missed my match of the year list. I know Case Lowe of Open the Voice Gate on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network had that match as his match of the year, and I don't blame him. Jackie Funky Kamei is, to my knowledge, was viewed more of like a comedy guy, and he came in plucky babyface and won over everyone. It was like a coming out party. Skywalker and Diamante were just these, like, obviously Dragon Gate wise, they just look huge facing against Lee and Funky Kamei, and it was phenomenal. They went to war. They were great bases for the smaller guys. It was phenomenal from start to finish.
I really need to watch that match. I know Shun Skywalker finished like third in the FSM 50, and I don't know if I watched a single one of his matches this year. Sadly, I'm going to put together my own attempt at an FSM 50 list in the next week or so. And I that's someone I definitely need to catch up on.
Yeah. Well, that is our match of the year. Now, Fred, let's talk about your wrestler of the year compilings, because what you do is you kind of scrape cage match data, but there's a certain science behind it. Kind of explain it, and let's talk about your results.
Sure. So what I do is I take all the matches off of cage match that get at least 10 votes. And for ones that get generally positive ratings, begin, because the voting on cage match, if you're not familiar with matches, is on a 1 to 10 scale. And it does like a weighted average of those votes from everyone. And so you end up with, a range of ratings for them. So what I did is I broke up the ratings of matches into tiers, starting with a tier from 6.75 to 7.24, all the way up to a tier of 9.25 and above, which are relatively rare. And I awarded a certain number of points based on the tier. This column will be printed probably Wednesday. So I think either after or about when this comes out. And so I just kept track of that the whole year. Well, I didn't keep track of it. I calculated it for everything from the whole year. Ended up with a list of 1,883 matches with at least 6.75 points and 10 or more ratings. Then I awarded points for these. And basically, I came up with who got the most points over the year. And number one is not Will Ospreay, as you would probably expect, despite his work in New Japan. And RevPro, he ended up as number two. Number one is Mike Bailey, which I thought was very interesting. But frankly, he's had a very quiet, great, and workhorse year. He's done 59 matches that I found in this list. And, all over the place. I think it's in 12 different promotions, plus the Mark Hitchcock Memorial Show, which isn't really a promotion. Based one, and he had a great year. So I'm hopeful that people will consider him for some awards when the year's over, and also if you haven't watched much of his stuff, you should start. 2022 was his return to North American wrestling, and he wasted no time.
Just imagine if Speedball would have been around for the last 5 years, how great and far along he would be.
Yeah, he really developed a lot in DDT and WXW over in Germany during those years. Because what he did is he came to the U.S. and without a work visa and got caught and was banned from the country for 5 years. So that was lifted. Impact was the one to sign him in the U.S. And he went out of his way to do a lot of indie matches and just worked all over the country and did fantastic work everywhere.
Yeah, that he did. Now you obviously Speedball has the most points, but who averaged out with the most points per match?
Well, you have to consider that some people barely had any qualifying matches. So if we just did like on a per match basis, it'd be guys like Musashi and Fujita Hayato and Canis, who only had one qualifying match, as well as Templario in CMLL and Yuna Mizunori, who actually I'm not even sure offhand where that match took place. So, but if you put in a filter for at least 10 matches, let me pull that back up real quick and tell Excel what to do. Number one is Will Ospreay, and I don't think that's much of a surprise to anyone, given the year he had. Next would actually be Jun Kasai. And the problem with him is he just didn't have a lot of stuff make tape and get distributed widely. He did a lot of work in Freedom or Freedoms and also like promotion, you know, like 666, you know, like a very niche deathmatch promotion in Japan that hardly ever makes tape. 3, 4, and 5 are the Elite, Omega, then Matt Jackson and Nick Jackson. And then the top 10 is rounded out by Dax Harwood, Adam Page, Cash Wheeler, Kazusada Higuchi from DDT, and Okada, of course, from New Japan.
Yeah, that's a pretty good list right there. A lot of AEW representation, which we always like here on this podcast. Fred, where can they read this?
It'll be coming up on voicesofwrestling.com. It'll be titled something along the lines of, depending on what Rich decides to do with it, but who finished 2022 as the best in-ring wrestler per cage match data.
Tremendous. Absolutely tremendous. That is our bonus episode here today. Make sure that you go and leave us a 5-star review. If you have not subscribed to our individual feed titled The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy, please do. It makes a massive difference in helping us grow the product and be able to distribute this great content out to even more people. You can follow us on Twitter at Good Bad Hungy. You can follow me on Twitter at The Real Forno or at The Vikings Wire, which I am the managing editor. You can follow Fred at Flagrant Wrestling, like Ted Turner, not Vince McMahon. In the show notes, you'll also be able to find a link to Fred's Patreon, where you'll be able to find even more wrestling goodness. And then, like I said, give us a nice 5-star review and help us grow the show so we can continue to, you know, do this for you.
Yeah, today I just published on my Patreon 3 just very random match reviews. There was a very good Gambari Pro match between Tyson Magucci and Mizuki Watase that I talked about. Then talked a little bit about a Seth Rollins-Austin Theory match from Raw a couple weeks ago. And then I finished it off by pulling up a very random match from IWTV from a Quebec City indie with Stu Grayson in the main event. So I just wrote about all 3 of those. And also, we will be recording this week on Thursday to get caught up after Dynamite. And we'll talk to you guys then.
Looking forward to it. Take care.
Hello. Do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.